We're on verse 3, it's on the second page. Verse 3 of the Dakshinamurti Sutta. Yasya eva spudanam sadatmakam. Let's do it like this. Yasya eva spudanam sadatmakam. Yasya eva spudanam sadatmakam. Asat kalparatakam bhasate. Asat kalparatakam bhasate. Sakshat tattvamasiti vedavachasa. Sakshat tattvamasiti vedavachasa. Yo bodhayatyashritan. Yo bodhayatyashritan. Yat sakshat karanat bhavena punaravrittir. Yat sakshat karanat bhavena punaravrittir. Bhavambho nidhau.
Bhavambho nidhau.
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam. Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
So repeat again after me. Yasya eva spuranam sadatmakam asat kalpartagam bhasate. Yasya eva spuranam sadatmakam asat kalpartagam bhasate. Sakshat tattvamasiti vedavachasa. Yo bodhayatyashritan. Sakshat tattvamasiti vedavachasa. Yo bodhayatyashritan. Yat sakshat karanat bhavena punaravrittir bhavambho nidhau. Yat sakshat karanat bhavena punaravrittir bhavambho nidhau. Together. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Sandhi. Yasya eva spuranam sad at sat atmakam asat kalpa artagam vasate sakshat tat tvam asi iti vedavachasa yo bodhiyati yaha bodhiyati ashritan yet sakshat tat tvam asi iti Veda vachasa yaha bodhiyati ashritan yet sakshat karanat bhavet na punara avritihi bhavam bodhina bonidau so bhava ambonidau tasmai shri guru mutiye nama idam shri dakshina mutiye so here each one of these is just a complete unfoldment. It's almost a prakriya, a methodology. So it's really using drishtantas that are often used also. So, yasya eva spudanam. Whose yasya? Whose very eva is emphasis. So you might say in old English, whose very consciousness, right? That giving emphasis. Yasya eva spudanam. Spudanam is consciousness. Which is sadatmakam, the consciousness whose nature is sat. Because the sat chit, the conscious being, consciousness is existence. Sat chit, the sat chit atma, the self, which is sat, existence, and consciousness. That's existence, which is consciousness. So here, whose very consciousness, the nature of which is sat. Existence, sadatmakam. Asat kalp artagam has gone into as though, that gum, it abides in the artas, the objects, which are asat kalpa, which are mithya. Asat means mithya. The kalpa means those objects that are projected by maya, which whose nature is mithya, asat. Asat means it has no independent reality of its own. Remember, there's two types of asat. It's all right, Marjorie. take one of these. Okay, it's okay. Okay. Asat Kalpartigam. Remember, let's just go over the Asat. The Asat. In terms of orders of reality, I'm just going to bring you up a little speed a little bit. Okay. The orders of reality, Sat or Satyam, is that which is existence itself. Means it can never be negated in past, present, or future. It has no beginning, it has no time, it is timeless. If it was bound by time, it would be changing. That wouldn't be Sat. Sat means just pure being that has no beginning and no end, can never be negated. Okay, so that which is actually timeless. Asat has two meanings. The first meaning of Asat is absolute non-existence. It has never come into existence, it has never been, it has never been experienced, it cannot be experienced. So those are the kind of the two borders in terms of the orders of reality. You have existence, you have absolute non-existence. But in the middle, there's what we call mitya. Mitya is that dependent being that has that which we experience, but it has no being of its own. So really, it is a sat, even though it's experienced. The reason it can be experienced is because it has an adhishtana, which is the sat chit, which is conscious being itself. That means borrowing conscious being, it gets to appear. We get to experience it. But without conscious being, as its material kind of vivarta upadana karma, the material cause that undergoes no change, that would be the absolute asat that is not available for experience. As long as this, what makes mitya available for experience is that it has its adhishtana, its being in the self, and it is an incidental attribute of the self, so that when it projects, it has no independent being. It is just a projection, it's a projection of maya, which has no being of its own. All of this, as we experience all of these nama rupas, these names and forms that we experience both internally in terms of your imagination and externally through the sense organs, all of the nama rupas that we experience upon analysis, we find have no independent being, because all of them come into being and go out of being. That's why they're bordered by non-existence, and also they're infinitely divisible. You know, they can be outside of your experience. So there's many prakriyas to show that the internal and external world have no, internal and external experiences have no independent existence. Maybe the two strongest prakriyas for establishing mitya are that anything that you experience within time and space comes into being and goes out of being. If you say something comes into being, what was its prior condition? What was its non-existence? Nothing can come from non-existence by the very definition of the word non-existence. It is not there. Nothing can come from something that is not there. But here this thing is. It is. It is. It has isness. But the isness is borrowed. The isness is the isness, the being that it enjoys, the knownness that it enjoys is really the nature of the Atma, the nature of the self. And so these imaginings that come into manifestation are experienced, and yet upon analysis they have no being of their own. That's true externally and internally. And so we call them mitya, because they have no independent being. They have no independent being, but they're experienced. So it's often in the Upanishads referred to as a sat. That can be confusing if you think that the only definition of a sat is absolute non-existence. Mitya also is a sat because it has no existence. But we call it mitya because we experience it. So this creation, upon analysis, it has no independent existence. But when we experience it, it is known. Right? Any experience that you have, it is and is known. But that doesn't make the experience real. What is the adhishtana, or what is the cause of the isness and the knownness? That's a material cause. It is. It exists. But where does that, what is the adhishtana, or what is the locus of that existence? Is it the object, or is it something else? And so upon analysis, we find that the being of things that we're actually projecting being, think of this, we're projecting existence. You can't look at existence. You can't objectify existence. Here's some existence. You can't say that. You also can't objectify consciousness as an object. That's not possible. And yet, there is nothing in your experience that does not have or depend upon consciousness and existence. It depends everything in your experience, inner and outer, and your own being. It is, it exists, and it is known. And that goes from the very most innermost depth of your own self to the most external object that you perceive. What we call the adhishtana, the underlying reality of all name and form, it is, and it is known, and there's no exceptions to that. That isness and is known itself cannot be projected. It's not an object within time and space. But at the same time, it can't be known or projected as an object which I can know through my sense organs, but I know it very well because I exist and I am conscious. But that amness and my consciousness is a self-evident fact. It is self-evident. It doesn't need to be illumined and cannot be illumined or known through a means of knowledge like my eyes or my sense organs. And so it's not objectifiable. But everybody knows it. Everybody knows it deeply, profoundly, but not as an objectified experience, right? And so if you realize all the experiences that you have in the world and in your mind, they are objectified. They exist within time and space, and so you have a means of knowledge, even a mind or your sense organs, to know them. We have a means of knowledge that is necessary, actually, to objectify all of those objects. There's only one case where this is not true, and that is the existence consciousness itself, which I know intimately as my being. I am, I exist, I am a conscious being. Then what if I were to say, well, how do you know that? How do you know that? What pramanas, what means of knowledge are you using to illumine that? None. I'm not using any pramanas. That's who I am. There are no pramanas necessary to illumine or to make known conscious being. Pramanas, the Advaita Vedanta, the Vedanta Pramana, the Upanishads, are necessary not to objectify consciousness and existence, which does not lend itself to objectification, but to differentiate myself, this conscious being that is me, from all of the objects which have been superimposed on me. And so I take on all the qualities of these superimposed objects because all of them have their being in me. I am their very self. And so, of course, they take themselves to be me. If they have a mind and sense organs, they take themselves to be me because I am their adhishtana. I am what they actually, I am the very existence and consciousness which they enjoy. So look at everyone's mind, just as an example. Your mind is mithya. It is objectifiable. It is continually changing. Comes into being and goes out of being, and yet it always is. And when it's in reference to your mind, or from the standpoint of the mind, I say, I am, I exist. But actually, the amness, which is true, is very personal. It's just you could say amness, isness, arness, being, existence. But it's very personal, so I say my existence, my amness, my being, right, is the mind. My mind is. My mind exists. I am my mind. This is how we talk. But if I asked you, can you objectify your mind and your thoughts? Do you know them? Can you see them? Oh, yeah, of course. I know exactly. I know my emotions. I know what I think. Can you objectify your amness? What do you mean? There's no way to objectify me. Can you objectify yourself to know that you are a conscious being? You have a pramana, a means of knowledge to objectify the consciousness that you're claiming to be, the existence, the amness that you're claiming to be. How do you know that? Because I am that. I am that. I am a conscious being. I don't have to objectify it. That's what I am. And then, well, how do you know that? How do you know that you are that? Because that's my experience. But you can't objectify that experience. You can't look at consciousness. You can't look at existence. I don't have to look at existence. It's self-evident. I am self-evident. I am self-shining. It's exactly what the Upanishads say. You are, you exist, you are self-shining. You don't need a means of knowledge to come and light you up because you're self-evident as consciousness. The conscious being that you are is self-shining. It doesn't need a pramana, right? But the whole creation that you experience does need a means of knowledge to light it up. And I use my mind and my sense organs for that so that I can gain vrittis that have some name, different names and forms, which are not in any, have no distance at all. The vrittis have no distance at all from me, conscious being. And so the conscious being that I am is owned by all of the vrittis, by all of the thought modifications, by all of the experiences. And so here, what this says, it says, the one whose consciousness, for the one whose very consciousness, which is the nature of Sat, my being, my amness, my consciousness, is what Basate lights up, having gone into or having no distance from all of these namarupas, all of these names and forms, from the most innermost, like your buddhi, your mind, your sense organs, and the most outermost, all of these names and forms shine Basate because of whose consciousness. So it says, yasya eva spudanam sadatmakam, this satchit, the one whose satchit illumines, having entered this, all of the objects that we experience that are really projected by Maya, and they have no independent existence of their own, asat kalpa is mithya. There's all of these mithya objects which totally depend on me for their being. So, whose consciousness, which is of the nature of existence, next line, sakshat tat tvamasi iti veda vachasa, yaha bodhiyati ashritan, yaha, the one who bodhiyati teaches, the ashritan, those who have taken refuge in the teacher, in him or in her, those who have taken refuge in the teacher, that one who teaches, the one who teaches those who have taken refuge, meaning please teach me, yeah, the ones who are the mamukshus, the ones who are the students, the disciples, the sishas. So he who teaches those students, Veda Vachasa, through the words of the Veda, what? Sakshat Tattvamasi Iti. The Tattvamasi means that thou art. By the words of the Vedas, that thou art. The that thou art in the Vedas, you are that, is called a Mahavakya. The Mahavakya is the essential teaching of all of the Vedanta. Everything else that is said is setting you up for the understanding of you are that. Mm. It could be Tat Tvamasi, you are that, or Aham Brahmasi, Aham Brahma Asi, I am Brahman. That's a Mahavakya. Prajnanam Brahma. Brahman is consciousness. Brahman is this conscious being. So the Tat Tvamasi is really, say if I say it in a, say I can say it like this, the very Pratyek Atma, this innermost self that you are, that you take to be me, the Aham, the I, this Aham, this me, is Brahman, is infinite. There's two ways to take it. I can take Tat Tvamasi as you are that, you, this Pratyek Atma, this innermost self, is Brahman, the infinite self, the non-dual infinite self. Now, another way to say it in a little more words, the self, the innermost self of me, this individual here, is the innermost self of Ishwara. The self of Ishwara, of the Lord, is the self that I am. There is only one self. Now, another way of saying tatvamasi, you, this jiva, this individual here, this body, mind, sense, this person that you are, you are Ishwara. You are Ishwara. This is the Mahavakya. You are Ishwara. You're teaching the students. They're all here. They don't know anything yet. And then you drop a Mahavakya on them. So, you are God. You are Ishwara. If you have Shraddha, if you have Shraddha in the words of the Shruti, you have to take that statement seriously. And at the same time, you realize that this body, mind, sense organ certainly is not Ishwara. It certainly is not, you know. But since they say that, there's what we call a lakshana that is involved here. There's a lakshana. That means for that statement to be true, there has to be an implied meaning, a deeper meaning of the meaning of you or that. You are that. Tat-twam. Twam means you. You are that. You are that Ishwara. There has to be you, O jiva. You are Ishwara. In order for that to be true, some things about you and some things about Ishwara have to drop off. Right? Because actually, you are limited in every conceivable way, actually, in terms of the upadis, and Ishwara is absolutely limitless. Limitless. I am not limitless in any way, but to sort of say that you are Ishwara, the limitations of the jiva and the limitlessness of Ishwara have to be removed. The example, and then what is left over, that's where the identity is. So that's like saying, all of the upadis, all of the conditioning adjuncts that are actually objectified by you, and all of the conditioning adjuncts that are objectified by Ishwara, the body, mind, sense organs, taking those off, then the self, the pratyaganat atma, the innermost self of either one, is identical. They're not twins. They're one. They're one and the same. So a good example for this, though every example is limited, that we use often is the wave ocean. There are countless waves in the ocean. Each wave is limited. And so say I'm the guru, I'm the wave guru, and I say to that wave, oh, wave, you are the ocean. You are the ocean. And the wave would say, no, I'm just a little wave. I'm only part of the ocean. Is that what you mean? No, you are the ocean. I can't be the ocean. Well, that's true. That is true from one standpoint. The wave name and form cannot be the ocean name and form. The ocean name and form is infinite comparatively, right, to the wave. So the wave can't be the ocean, but the truth of the wave can be the truth of the ocean. The truth of the wave is water. The wave is nothing but water. The ocean is nothing but water. There are not two waters. There is one water. The water that is the wave is the very water that is the ocean. So here, there's teaching methodologies that go along with every Mahavakya that allows you to recognize the non-dual nature of your own being. The self that you are is Ishwara. That this innermost self, the conscious being that you are, is Ishwara. Is Ishwara's self. There's only one self, and that one self is the self in all beings, like the water in all waves. It's the self in all beings, the very self of Ishwara. There is only one Atma. Because there is only one Atma, one self, we say that self is infinite. That infinite self is called Brahman. So this, what I've taken to be a limited self, is only limited by these conditioning adjuncts. The body, the mind, the sense organs, etc., all of which are objectifiable. And Ishwara's And Brahman is limited, is not limited, but is taken to be a limitless form because of the Maya Upadhi that has a subtle component and a physical component. That is what we call the Lord. But really, Bhagawan would say, well, I'm really just Brahman. You know, I am Brahman. Say if Ishwara could talk and we say, who are you? He would say, I'm Brahman. Not the Mithya Upadhi. And I would say I am the Atma, which is Brahman, not the Mithya Upadhi, not the Mithya Upadhis. That's not where my identity lies. My identity does never lies with the Upadhi. It always lies with a conscious being, the me, that I have taken to belong to the Upadhi. You don't say I am the body, some inert dead body. That's not where your identity lies. Even though we say that the ahankara, the I notion, lands on the body, that's because of self-ignorance. But it's not really landing on the body, it's landing on the conscious body. The body, the consciousness which I have superimposed on the body. So the me is always this me, I. It's always landing on the me who is actually Brahman. And then when that Brahman is superimposed upon the body, mind, sense organs, then the conscious being is the body. The conscious being is the mind. But your aham, your I, lands on the conscious being. It'll be the same for Ishvara. The infinite Upadhi doesn't make it any less Maya. The infinite Upadhi, the manifestation of infinite knowledge, I mean, that would be a great experience, I suppose. But so I have a great Upadhi. Ishvara has a wonderful, incredible, limitless Upadhi. But where does the self lie? Not in the Upadhi that comes into manifestation from beginningless time into manifestation and out into its causal condition like that from beginningless time. Where's the me, though? Where's the me for Ishvara? Where's the me for you? It's always only in the Atma, whether you have a limited version of the Atma by identifying yourself with the Upadhis, or a limitless version of the Atma from the standpoint of Ishvara, from the standpoint of the Upadhi. But the self is what is you, and whether you know it or not. You don't have to know all of this about yourself, because yourself is self-evident. What you know is I'm a conscious being, and I don't know what's going to happen to me when I die. You know? If you don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to me when I die, but, you know, I am me. I'm a conscious being. But that's all I know about me. I don't know what the context is, but I know I am a conscious being. And so this conscious being that I am, I need to realize myself in my own right. I need that knowledge. So here, what he says, sakshat. Sakshat means immediately, directly seen, experienced, realized. Sakshat has immediacy. So tattvamasi iti veda vachasa. By the words of the Veda comes by the words of the Veda, tattvamasi, you are that. That immediate, direct sakshat. So he says sakshat tattvamasi. Means it's immediately, directly appreciated through the teaching methodologies that make up the Upanishads. The Upanishads, all of the teachings of the Upanishads circle around and make available to you the direct, immediate understanding that I am the non-dual Brahman, that myself is free of time, it is free of change, it is non-dual, there is no second thing. That is the vision of the Vedas held in the Mahavakya. But the Mahavakya needs to be unpacked. You can't just go to somebody and say, tattvamasi, you are that. There's a lot of teaching that goes in to making that available for you to recognize the truth of it. So he who bodhiyati teaches, literally causal, bud means to know, bodhiyati means to cause to know. He who teaches the students, through the words of the Vedas, tattvamasi, to be the sakshat tattvamasi, teaches in such a way that these words are directly, immediately recognized as myself, pointing to my own nature. And he says, yet sakshat karanat bhavet na punar avritihi bhavam bhunida. He says, from that sakshat karanat, from making it immediate, for of whom? From the making of the, yet means of that self, immediately recognized, realized, differentiated, seeing directly immediate, sakshat karana, to make something immediately, experientially recognized and known, sakshat karana. So because of making, or from making the atma, that the atma, the self, that is satchit, the satchit atma, directly recognized, bhavetna punaravrittihi bhavam bonidau. He says, there is never any more becoming. He says, again, there is no more avritti. Avritti means returning, the samsara. There is no returning back again. There is no coming back again into the ocean. Ambodindao means like the great reservoir of water. It's named for the ocean. Ambas nidhi. So ambodindao. Into this into this ocean of bhavam, of bhava. The ocean of bhava is the ocean of becoming, birth after birth after birth after birth. So it's a name for samsara, the ocean of becoming. So into this ocean of becoming, na bhavet punar avrati, there is no rebirth, there is no coming back into this ocean of samsara. This ocean of samsara is dependent upon self-ignorance. The self-ignorance that causes me to take myself to be a body, mind, sense organs, to be a limited form subject to birth and death that exists within the time and space of this creation. By taking this Atman, this me, having this the me that I call me, that I say when I who I mean when I say I, having the mind, body, sense organs, identifying that me as belonging to itself. So now I, this personal I that is me, that is the one I'm always referring to, is superimposed upon the body, mind, sense organs, not by the self, but by the mind. Right? The self is just pure conscious being, me, that I label as me. So this self is superimposed by the mind, by the buddhi, onto the body, mind, sense organs, because this body, as long as it is here, enjoys consciousness. Once it dies, it doesn't. It's just a, you know, like a dress that's gotten old and it's fallen off. So it's like an old dress that's fallen off. You know, the thoughts enjoy consciousness when they're there. When they're not there, they don't enjoy consciousness. They're not there. You don't ever go anywhere. The Atman never goes anywhere. Its dresses keep changing and changing and changing, and from the standpoint of the different dresses, now I am this dress, now I'm this dress, now I'm this dress, now I'm this dress. But these dresses keep going, and you still say, I'm these dresses, I'm this dress, I'm this thought, I'm this experience, I'm this experience, I'm this experience. The experiences are all different. The moods are all different. The emotions are all different. The perceptions are always different. The waking state is different. What about when you go not just to the experiences in this waking state? Every one is different, and every one I'm identified with. It's like saying, I am this which has just left. I am this which has just left, but I haven't left. I am this which has just come, but I was here before it came. So how does that work? Yeah. So it's a false identification that's taking place on the part of these experiences that all rise up into their adhishtana, into conscious being. When they're smitya, when they rise up, they enjoy conscious being. When they go away, they don't. So I am the one that doesn't go away. I am always the same. The one common denominator that is ever present is your being. It doesn't matter what the experience is. It could be the most negative experience. It could be the most positive experience. It can be a perception. Whatever it is, you are there. Now what about this? In the waking state, I am this body experiencing this world. That's the waking state. I'm using my sense organs. But in the dream state, this body and this world are not what I'm experiencing. So here I say, I am the waker, the one who is the experiencer of this world through my sense organs. But in the dream state, you know, I am the dreamer. I am the one who experiences the dream, which is a different world than the waking state. And the dreamer is a different character than in the waking state. In fact, the dream state, when that is there, it negates the waking state. in many different ways, but just we can just look at it experientially. And when you're dreaming, you have a dream world, probably a dream body, or maybe not. You can just have a dream without any character, without identification with anything in it. But that's your reality. I am the dreamer. I am there in that world, identified with whatever body it happens to be or not. It could be a totally different body than the one I have in the waking state. So here we have the waking state, which is actually replaced, we're talking experientially, by the dream state. When I'm a dreamer, I'm not the waker. But I'm there as the self of both states. The one who is the waker is the one who is the dreamer. But the worlds are different, the bodies are different, the experiences are different, the situations are different, the perceptions are different, the self-identity is different, the ahankara is different, the I-notion is different. But I am the self of that waking state, and I am the self of that dream state. It's my world, it's my dream, right? It's very interesting, especially when we go to the deep sleep state where there is neither waking state or dream state. In that state, the mind goes into its causal condition. So there is no experience at that time of any duality. I don't have that. There's nobody commenting. Your mind is in causal condition. So your mind and your sense organs, they're not saying, What a wonderful deep sleep it is. They're gone. They're temporarily gone in a causal condition waiting until they wake up. And so they can't comment on the experience. The experience is there, but they can't comment on it until you wake up. And then that deep sleep experience, you remember and you can talk about it. You say, I had such a deep sleep. I didn't even move at all. I went to sleep, I was sound asleep, and I didn't wake up until the morning. It was incredible. It's one of the best sleeps I've ever had. I didn't know anything. This is how they describe it in the Shastra. I slept so well, and I didn't know anything. That's what they say in the Shastra. I slept so well, and I didn't know anything. But when you're in deep sleep, you're not saying, oh, I'm sleeping so well and I don't know anything. Because the one who could say that is in causal condition until that same one comes out and then recollects and can tell you all about that sleep. It's an amazing thing. It's a miraculous thing. It's just natural for us. You don't even think about it, really. But it's a miraculous thing. There's what we call an anuvritti in these three states of experience of me, just me. It is my dream. It is my waking state. It is my deep sleep. I am present in all three, but the one who is present is not this body, mind, sense organs. It is not this jiva in this form. It is not the world in this form. That's not who is there in each one of the states. In each one of the states is just conscious being me, just the pure me. And everything that is negated in the waking state by the dream state is not you. Anything that is negated in the waking state when you're in the dream state is not you. And vice versa. And then anything that is negated in the deep sleep state is also not you. Because you can be devoid of that experience. Let's talk just on the level of experience now. Just think about it. What is essentially your nature, and you are in every experience that you have, bar none. Every experience that you have, you are there. And so if I'm in this experience and this experience and this experience, but all three of these experiences negate each other, for instance, when the dream state is, the waking state is not. And when the deep sleep state is, neither the waking nor the dream state is manifest. So anything, any of these conditions and anything that's happening in them is not me, because I can be without them. if I can be without them, then they're an experience I'm having, but they're not me, because I can exist without that experience. That's very profound, because sometimes we don't think, yeah, but I can be without the experience, but I'm still that. No, you're actually not still that. If that experience is something that is objectifiable, your experience, and it can go away, then that experience is not essential to your being. And when we do this analysis within the waking state itself, we keep negating any experience that comes and goes, because I see very clearly that I outlast that experience. And I am present for every experience that ever comes my way, but I'm free of the experience, or it would be dragging me with it when it goes. And where would I be when that experience hasn't come yet? I haven't had the experience yet, but I'm still here. And then it goes away, and I'm still here. So we use this, the waking, dream, deep sleep, we also use to help the mind differentiate me, this me, from all of the experience, the whole waking world, and the identification of whatever jiva, whatever body, mind, sense organs is in that waking world. We use the dream world to negate the waking world, and the waking world to negate the dream world, and the deep sleep world to negate both of them, and even to negate my being as a knower, that consciousness is a knower. Consciousness is not a knower. Consciousness is known. It is self-evident knownness, but it's not a knower, because I give up the knower in the waking state is gone. The knower in the dream state is gone when I have another state. The knower in the deep sleep state is not experienced at all. Right? The knowership is objectified. What isn't objectified is object. What isn't ever negated, ever at any time, is just the non-dual conscious being that is me. You just think, sometimes a good meditation, I'll probably do this one, is to just sit in the meditation and just say, I am the body. So you don't have to worry about not being the body. You know, that's where. You just, being the body, you just say, I am the body. And then you focus on your own amness, your own being. You can say, I am the mind. You focus on your own being. I am this thought. I am this thought. I am this thought. Focusing on your own being without even bothering to get rid of the dresses. Still, that me never changes. The dresses change. The upadis change. The vrittis change. But even if you say, I am the vritti, when you take on another vritti, the I am, the me, is still there in that dress. It never changes at all. Because of this, we can be taught, there can be teaching methodologies that help you to differentiate yourself, the self that you've always been, the self that you know so intimately. It can be differentiated from all of the experiences that you've identified with, that the mind has identified with you. Like, I am happy, I am sad, I am a woman, I was a little girl, you know, I am a man, I am a dog, whatever the upadi happens to be. You know, but the me is always exactly the same. So here in this verse, he says, because, see how we're doing here, because this yit sok shot kadanot, from making this self to be the self that I am to be directly, immediately recognized as myself, there is no more coming back birth after birth after birth, taking birth after birth after birth into this ocean of samsara, this ocean of becoming. And the reason for that is because in this birth itself, because of this teaching, the direct realization of yourself, yourself has never been born. And it never dies. It never changes. And so how can you be born? You have never been born, and you never will be born. And now the thing is, the mind that had taken itself to be you, it has taken you itself to be you, and then itself on the other side to be perhaps the body or the subtle body that's reincarnating. That's all because of self-ignorance. And so because of that self-ignorance, I'm always looking out, taking myself to be this body, mind, sense organs. And so that is that ajnanam, that self-ignorance is the core of really the ahankara that keeps you going. Also the gasoline. I need this, okay, when I die, when I take my next breath, I really hope I would really like to be a good tennis player. I'd love to be able to be a good tennis player. I didn't make it in this life. Or I wish I could have been a great musician, you know. Or I hope next life I could live on a farm and have lots of animals. Yeah. But at the time of your death, do you still have these, if I could only have this, or could I only have that? That desire, that raga dvesha. But what if that's not? That's the gasoline that keeps this jiva reincarnating. Let me do this. Let me have that. Let me go to Swarga Loka. I would like to go even to the Gandharva Loka where they all play music all the time. I would love to be able to do that. So say when you die at the point of your death, you know, when the body is shedding, who are you at that time? What is the essential nature of you and your personality and your desires and your dharma? What is it? What are you left with? What is that, the essential nature? Not the atma, I mean, but the jiva, the transmigrating jiva. What are you left with at that time? For a jnani, for somebody who's had the time, the ability to mature in this knowledge, already, even before the body drops, the psyche, that psyche of that jiva is already resolved into me. That is its home. Ananda, the ananda that I had projected onto the world, I have discovered with maturity, because a lot of habitual ignorance and habitual raga dveshas have to drop off, but over amount of time with this knowledge, they do. They just drop. They slowly drop off, so that my mind loves to be at home with myself, with the wholeness, the ananda of my being, enjoying Ishwara. Right? And so now this body is, the prarabdha is over. What's going to change? Your ajnanam isn't going to come back and say, "Oh, why don't you just go out and be a tennis player now? Mm-hmm. Let's try it again. Let's see what else. Let's see what else is there." Yeah. But there's no one to do that. There's no one who wants to. If there's somebody who wants to do that, there's still some stuff left, and you can go do that. But it's hard to move from the ananda of your own being the more your mind drops off ignorant behavior. And so they say when this body drops, the jiva, which is already just, it, which is already only there in a mitya form, because you are yourself. There's really no gasoline to push forward. There's only the gasoline, so to speak, to just be with yourself. And so this cycle of samsara no longer goes on. So it's on two levels. On one level, the level of just yourself, you've never ever reincarnated. Your being is free of time and space. So there's no change for you, there's no travel, there's just the changeless ananda or wholeness of your non-dual being. That's who you are. From the side of samsara, the jiva is only a mitya jiva now. There's no one inside who thinks, "I am this body, mind, sense organs, or these thoughts, or these emotions are me." There's nobody inside who feels that way. Because the one inside has knowledge, the buddhi itself has knowledge, it recognizes me as itself, and it recognizes the buddhi and the body and mind sense organs as themselves, as what they are. It knows all that viveka is there. It recognizes this universe as Ishwara. It recognizes body, mind, sense organs as part and parcel of Ishwara. And I am just, myself is just the one who is really intrinsically the adhishtana, the self of the whole thing, the self of all beings. I recognize that. I'm clear on that. I know who you are as well as I know who I am. I know who Lucky is as well as I know who I am. Because there's only one me. I know Ishwara. Because I am Ishwara, actually. I am Ishwara. This body, mind, sense organs is part of Ishwara. But Ishwara is a manifestation of my being. I see all that. I understand all that. And I live all that. And when I don't live that, it's a sadhana. It's like, whoa, we have a little work to do there. because these behaviors are just conditionings from beginningless time. Ignorant conditionings that I always say the little jiva's head pops up because of ignorant conditionings. But otherwise, there's no samsara for me. There's no one who wants to travel. There's no one who wants an experience other than my being, which is the essential nature of all experience. So there is no transmigration anymore. I just abide as Brahman, which is Ishvara. For me, there's no more jiva upadhi. Doesn't mean that Ishvara is not there. The mitya Ishvara is mitya, keep from beginningless time, expressing as the whole creation. So that's an incidental attribute of Brahman. I am Brahman, right? And so that I am Brahman, I am the Maya Upadhi, I experience the Maya Upadhi when the Maya Upadhi is up, from the standpoint of the Maya Upadhi. From my own standpoint, I'm just me. That viveka is clear. So he says this, once this knowledge is sakshat, means direct, which is because it's sakshat, because I know it myself now, I know myself, this knowledge is complete. Then when that happens, there is no more returning birth, death into the ocean of samsara. So salutations to the Lord Dakshinamurti, who now is in the form of my guru, because they're always honor in the Vedanta, the guru sisha parampara, the passing on of this knowledge in the same form. So that the one who is the guru becomes the one who is the sisha becomes the one who is the guru. The self of the guru is the self of the sisha, is the self of Ishvara, is the self of all beings. Yeah. But they honor the parampara, that this knowledge be transmitted from teacher to student, and that student becomes a teacher and transmits it to their students, and it goes on until throughout the creation, until the end of the creation. That is the promise of the Upanishads, that even in the deepest, darkest Kali Yuga, you know, where the cow of Dharma is only on one leg, and its one leg is really getting tired and sore, you know, even then, there will be small groups throughout the world that will know this teaching will continue, so that anybody in the universe at any given time who actually is a mumukshu, those people will always get their teacher. At the time that they become a mumukshu, then very shortly within that period of time, that teacher will be there. That's the promise. Om Tat Sat. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.